This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on Joy 94.9, it is The Fool and the Opera. Good evening. And yes, we've got another wonderful show lined up. I've got my special guest in already, which I'm very excited about. I've got Emma O'Brien, who's a wonderful composer, a music therapist, and a performer as well. And she's going to talk to us about her excellent new, it's been in the works for about 5 years now, but the latest staging of it is quite new. So Avatar is the opera. So we'll be speaking with Emma O'Brien today. And there's a few other fun things happening. In fact, today's theme, as you know, I always like to set up a theme for the show, is the soul divine, the spirit reborn, and the goddess ecstatic. So we've got an excellent mix of all different religions coming in today as well. The first track, because you know I always like to start off the show with a bit of an out there zany track, I've picked from Jesus Christ Superstar, which is a rock opera from the 70s, but I've also, because I like to be controversial, if that's what the word is, we've also got a track about a more pagan mystic goddess as well. So stick around and I'll play that for you a little bit later on. Thanks very much to Gary and to the team from behind the scenes, to Vito, Bill and Penelope. It's a great little show as well, just before mine. So definitely great listening every Sunday. And it's also a very good show that comes after mine as well. There's Bent Notes after the show. So from 7 o'clock today, you can have an evening of wonderful jazz. But as I said, first off, to start off, I've got a bit of a religious track, of course, because it is Sunday, so we've got to all atone for our sins. This is from the rock opera. It is Jesus Christ Superstar, and it's from the 1992 production, which is the Australian production with John Farnham, which I'm sure Jenny O'Joy will be very happy about me playing John Farnham on the show. It's also got Kate Sobrano and John Stevens. And now, for those of you who kind of, you know, wonder what rock opera is, rock opera is kind of, opera is when you've got music and words all working together in the one, and the story is always told with music. You never have text or words without the music. You know, you've always got an accompaniment or a recitative, or you know, there's always music following it. And rock opera is very much the same, except for it's a little bit more rocky and electric, and it's got electric guitars, which I'm sure, you know, Mozart and Monteverdi would have like snuck in if they had it, but here you are. This is Everything's All Right on Joy 94.9. This is The Fool and the Opera. You're on Joy 94.9. It is The Fool and the Opera. And I forgot to mention before that, you know, the show relies on your feedback and comments. So if you've got anything that you want to ask Emma, because I've got a live guest in the studio today. I don't normally have one, so it's very special to have a live guest. And if you've got any questions you'd like to ask her, you can also SMS them in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. I've also got Brendan on the telephone, so you can give him a dial. It's 96992949. And keep that number in mind, because we do have a double pass giveaway away to the opera that we'll be speaking with Emma about, Avatara. So 96992949 is that number to key into your phone and have it saved. Now, that was, you heard before, Everything's All Right from Jesus Christ Superstar, the rock opera. And I love that last little line at the end, which is, you know, just close your eyes and think of nothing tonight. And I think that, you know, a lot of people will be doing that tonight and have been doing the last couple of days. But you've got one more night to basically, you know, stay at home and think of nothing. So do it, I suppose. Now, as I said before, I've got Emma O'Brien in the studio. So Emma is a music therapist, a composer and a performer, and she's been working on an extraordinary piece called Avatar for the last 5 years. The work has existed in four incarnations and is based on five personal stories of cancer patients. And she joins us to talk about the final phase of the opera, which is a full staging with costume, orchestration, puppets and multimedia. Mm. So thanks for joining me, Emma. Oh,
thanks for having me.
Now, let's start off with just a bit of discussion about music therapy, what music therapy is and what you can do with music therapy.
Well, that's actually a really big question. I work as a music therapist at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and I've been there for about 10 years now. And so the aim with music therapy in a public hospital is to use music to help people cope with their treatment. So that can range from me taking the guitar and singing to them, helping them to rest, sometimes just going there and having some fun, you know, doing something that's not medical. So maybe I'll just go in and see if I know their favourite tunes and we have a bit of a chat and we talk about music. Sometimes we provide relaxation sessions, or we can go even further and write songs with people, which is sort of where the genesis of this opera came from. And that's about people being able to express themselves in a different medium. So we sit and we chat and chat and chat and, you know, what would you like to write your song about? And that's normally, oh, I don't know. And then, you know, I'm pretty sure the story comes flowing out, and then from that we create their own original song. And so then they can give that to their family and their friends, or just keep it for themselves, or share it amongst each other. And a lot of those songs that we were talking earlier, and a lot of them are funny.
Yep.
You know, I think people wouldn't expect funny songs to come out of that, but often humour is used to help cope. Mm. And a lot of them are very, very beautiful as well.
So that's... In this particular opera, it's based on the stories of five people. Let's name those people, because, you know, it is a personal story about them. So.
Yeah. So basically in 2004, seems like last year, but anyway, it wasn't, I was approached by an opera company, and they wanted to come in more than opera to do some work at the hospital and singing in the stairwells and things like that, which was lovely. And then I thought, oh, you know, we'd had such great success with writing songs in pop and jazz and all that sort of thing in the music therapy. And I thought, oh, how hard can it be? Why don't we write an opera? I thought, I'll extend that method and we'll call it opera therapy.
Yep.
And so they came on board, and we got a grant from Arts Victoria and also from a private philanthropist. And she's been great, actually, Betty Amson. She's been with us all the way through all these years, actually, helping the development of the opera. And the opera therapy was begun. So I approached some of the patients I'd been working with. Some had written songs with me before, others hadn't. So there was Mary, and she is a woman with Maltese heritage, but, you know, an Aussie lady with older kids. And she was a laugh a minute, absolutely hilarious woman. And she thought, oh, that'd be hilarious. Let's write an opera. And then there was Bruce, this huge Aussie larrikin, you know, man of the sea. And I said, oh, look, I've got this project. Would you like to be part of it? And he goes, oh, I've never been to an opera, but why not? And then there's Diane and Marla, a mother and a daughter, both had had cancer. And Marla was actually quite unwell at the time and asked her to be a part of it. But, we, you know, I believe in working with people and having fun and doing whatever we can. And so she joined the project, and so did her mum. And mind you, none of these people had ever been to an opera before as well, which actually was probably a good thing in a funny way. And then there was Lisa, who had just finished her treatment. She was a young mum. She had, you know, lots of little kids. And so it was good support for her, because Mary and Bruce had had their treatment a while back, and so had Marla. And so they sort of all came together into this room, and we started to write the piece. But sadly, Marla did pass away, which was expected. And Diane wanted to continue and tell both their stories, so did it in her memory, which was a really amazing, brave thing to do, I think, and a beautiful thing to do. So her daughter lives on in the stories in the opera, which is great.
Now, one of the themes, of course, of this particular opera is, you know, the most connecting theme is the fact that they're all cancer patients, you know, of different types of cancer.
Yeah.
But cancer is the main theme. Is there another theme that you think that comes out of it that, you know...
I think the theme is life and transformation. The main theme of the opera is actually is transformation. So you've got these five stories told through four people who are very separate at the beginning of the opera. And through the catalyst of cancer, their lives are transformed. You know, if you'd met Bruce before he'd had his cancer, you wouldn't have recognised him, because he was an angry, angry man, you know. And through this catalyst, he fell in love with life again. And so that's what the opera is really about them changing and coming through and transforming. And also alongside of that, we've got the history of cancer medicine, so we're sort of weaving in. It's amazing how much we've changed, but how much we haven't changed, you know. And I sort of weave that in throughout the whole piece now. That didn't happen in the first stage, but now in this stage. And we have a medical character too, who plays different aspects of treatment, right from, you know, from the very sort of accurate scientific side all the way, and we even explore the world of the charlatan. So we're looking at across the whole scope of medicine.
Right.
And because some people say, oh, you know, an opera about cancer, is that really depressing? And it's not. It's very uplifting. We've said it really beautifully. Well, I have. And the work is, the main aim is that it's actually about life, you know, about learning to live. Because you can go through your life and not really live it, can't you? And sometimes, and that's often the story I get at the hospital too from people, that this catalyst has helped them really live their lives.
I've got a quote from Bruce on the press release, which I think was quite beautiful, which he says that I want to share our stories in music with everyone so that we can help other people, so we can let them know that they are not alone. And I think that that notion of sort of the music being able to transcend people from their loneliness is quite a powerful aspect of it. Is that something that, you know,
absolutely,
music therapy has...
I think so, and I think that's one of the things music therapy does anyway. You know, people are isolated in their rooms when they're being treated, and you come in with music, and let's say they write a song, and then I'm able to share that song with bed five, you know, so then they're no longer isolated. And is that look, one of those quotes I read, you know, those little books you get, you know, Book of Calm. I don't even know who had this quote, but it's beautiful. It's loneliness is a longing for kind, not company. So it's that concept that you can be in a room full of people but still feel really, really alone because no one understands you. And I think that's what Bruce is talking about. Like, he wants to reach out to people who've had similar stories. And they're quite alarming statistics. 1 in 3 people's lives are touched by cancer in Australia. So there are a lot of people there that we can reach out and share stories, or anyone in any crisis, I think, would be able to identify with what people are going through. So, yeah, I like that quote from Bruce too.
I think that... There's been a few incarnations, as I mentioned before, and one of the ones was the documentary, which has been winning awards internationally as well as in Australia. Have you received personal feedback from people about what they thought of, you know?
Even all the way from Israel. Whenever it shows overseas, because it's done the telly rounds as well, I get emails. When it was shown on SBS in 2005, we did a chat room afterwards. Absolutely, I couldn't keep up with it. Luckily, I had a friend who could type really well, because I'm a terrible typer, so I don't even know how I managed to do any work. I always get the words all mixed up, but he was there just typing at an alarming rate to keep up with the chat room.
Right.
And it really ranged from people who'd either had cancer themselves or had been through some sort of crisis and could really identify with the people, opera lovers, people who'd lost people as well to cancer, and then right to the other end of the spectrum, and he always sticks in my mind, I don't even know his name, but he said, oh, hi, I'm a 30-year-old male, never been to the opera, I don't know anyone with cancer, but when can I see this piece again? So that's when we decided, actually, let's develop it further. Let's turn this piece that was, you know, in essence, the focus was the therapy, and they made the documentary film like a fly on the wall as we created it, and it was beautifully put together. And let's turn what we did then into a really sort of well-formed artistic piece, which is why it took so long.
Now, I've got you've brought in a track for us to play. This one is of Merlin Quaife, who we've had the pleasure of having in the studio as well.
She's so wonderful.
Now, can you describe what the track will be?
Yeah, this is from one of our workshop pieces. So the recording's okay quality, but it's not, you know, it's not from CD quality. And it's just with piano and voice. And this is the piece where Diane talks about watching her daughter go through treatment, and a lot of and one of the themes in the opera is too that it's almost harder to care for someone to go through an illness, and that could be any illness, than actually experiencing it yourself. And so she's talking about her daughter and how they told her she only had 4% chance of surviving. So it's a sort of it's almost like a lullaby. And at the end of the piece, she does a deal with the devil. She pretty much says, give it to me, not her. And the irony is, of course, in the end, that deal comes true.
Right.
Yeah, so I'll let Merlin sing it for you.
You're on the Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on the Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was Merlin Quaife singing a piece, an extract from Avatara. She's making a deal with the devil. It's quite beautiful piece, but it's also quite dark as well. With there's an interesting instrument there in the end, isn't
there,
Emma?
Yes, I forgot to say there was marimba in there as well, and he actually bows the cymbals at the end as well. That's right. Gadu Bai playing. He's a fantastic percussionist. Mm. So he's in the opera now as well.
I'm joined by Emma O'Brien, who is a music therapist and composer, and she's the composer of the Avatar, the opera, which is an opera that tells the story of five personal stories of cancer patients. And Emma, I just wanted to know about the sort of the process of creation, because how have you sort of, you know, in the notes I've read that you've sort of tried to find a voice for each character that sort of, when you went to the patient and said, this is your story, this is your sound, they actually sort of, you went, yeah, that does actually feel like me.
So to create an opera from nothing, I thought, well, I need something to hook into. So we sat down at the piano together. This is early on in 2004, and tried to find their own personal sound for cancer. And so they all ended up with their own personal cancer chord. So that was like a tonality that I used to base a lot of their pieces on. And then in the opera therapy stage, so they were sitting next to me, and I was at the piano, and once the libretto was set, then I would play a little bit, and because I'm also an opera singer, and sing a little bit to them. And is that how you felt? So, for instance, in that piece, that's actually from the original work, and you can feel that the beginning is quite still. And I said, oh, weren't you really stressed out? She goes, no, I was exhausted. I was exhausted when I was watching her. So that's why it has that sort of, no, doesn't move much, the melody, until the end when she's really, you know, trying to give the deal. So the idea in the opera therapy and in any sort of music therapy is this the way you feel? Is this a correct musical interpretation of your emotions? Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's an interesting notion, because I suppose that that's sort of been why music has moved people across the centuries. It's that ability for emotion to be translated in music or to be interpreted in music. How do you actually, that's the thing that, you know, is there a spark moment where you kind of go, right, this is the right set of keys to make that particular emotion? Or
I think when you're collaborating with someone, there is.
Yeah.
And I think even when you're doing it on your own, you know, sometimes you don't know where it comes from. It just arrives and demands to be heard or played. I used to do a lot of my work, certainly in the first stage, at the piano with my voice. And then over the years, I've gotten better at hearing in my head and putting it straight onto paper. So you do hear this sound in your head, and I tend to work with words first, and then from that, the music grows out. But certainly in writing the overture, it just kind of came to me, you know, and it has to, so you put it out there. And I think if you're really true to what you're feeling and thinking, then the sound will be correct. Is that making? I'm sort of talking about two different things there. And I was sort of talking about working with someone, which is more about me reflecting back, have I interpreted you correctly? And being this, I mean, within that kind of situation, I'm like this little toy that they can play with that will play music and sing for them and push the button until you get it right. And I don't always get it right too. There's this great scene in the opera therapy documentary which you don't really see so much because they've cut it, you know, and it's like I've got this sort of miracle thing. Is that your cancer chord? Dring, and they go, yes. But in fact, if you saw the rough shots, you'll see me going, is this it? And mucking around for ages until finally they go, yep, now you've hit it. So there is a knowing, I think, and that knowing can be in collaboration, or that knowing can be just as a composer yourself.
And in terms of the music for this particular piece, how would you consider it in terms of, like, there's, you know, sort of atonal music, and then there's sort of, you know, the more traditional sort of your structured chords, and this is the pattern that it must follow, you know?
Well, because I'm a trained singer, it's certainly lyrical. I've tried to make it as singable as possible, and that's where I begin with the voice. I love composers like Peter Sculthorpe, Arvo Pärt, and those sort of sounds. Hildegard von Bingen. I really love early music as well, so a lot of the tonality is like that. And also Benjamin Britten. So I wouldn't say it was atonal, but there are moments of dramatic tonality. But I don't sit there and go, oh, goodness, I should have put in a 4-5-1 there.
Yeah.
But I tend to just follow the melody through the piece. Is that explain that? And also I like to explore different instruments in terms of their tonal qualities. There's a saxophone in the orchestration of the opera, and he, in a way, that sound is a bit like the sort of this menacing, annoying medical thing. that keeps coming in and out, and sort of it pursues them. So I give all the instruments characters as well. That's why I love using tuned and untuned percussion, because there's such a wonderful scope of sound. So you can actually get a really atonal sound. If a guy gets a little rubber ball and he drags it across a bass drum, it's like it's going roar that comes out, you know. So there are those sort of soundscape qualities within the opera as well.
Sure. And what are some of the other instruments that you've used? There's a very interesting percussion instrument that you were talking about before that fascinates me.
It is. It's you should Google it, because you can hear it on the net. It's called an ocean harp. There aren't many of those in Australia. In fact, I think we've got the only one in Melbourne. It's guy actually put me onto it, because I kept saying, oh, can you bow the marimba here? I really want these sort of, because one of the characters, Bruce, is a man of the sea, and he loses his love of the sea, so he gets almost seduced back to life through the sea. And there's this wonderful piece where the women are almost like sirens, you know, beckoning back, come breathe in the sea, like this, and it really needed some sort of haunting kind of siren-y sound. And so, you know, he's bowing the marimbas and thinking, oh, it's not quite right. And he goes, listen to this. So I Googled it and went, oh my goodness, it's this incredible instrument. It's like, it's literally like two tin plates put together with water inside and spikes coming off it. And then when you bow it, it does actually sound almost like a whale. It's incredible. And you can hit it and bang it, and goes, it's like a sound I've never heard before. So there's those sort of textures that come in and out of the opera. We obviously try not to overuse them. But when you get a new toy, it's with you. But, so I'm really quite excited about those sounds.
Lovely. Now, also speaking more about sort of the writing process and all that sort of stuff. Now, in this particular piece, you know, people told their stories to you. So you kind of had a libretto that was kind of taken from their stories, their words themselves.
Yeah. So that was in the first phase, and that was like story one, story two, story three, story four, told on their own. And which worked for that instance. And then when I wanted to develop it further, I sort of looked more in terms of their common themes, and so I put the four stories across each other and tried to mirror their experience through the opera therapy, which was about four strangers coming together through this catalyst. And so a lot of the libretto I rewrote to make it fit in terms of a more dramatic narrative arc, and also worked into the history of cancer and medicine into the opera as well. So a lot of the words are original, and that was all done with their permission. You know, I said, do you trust me? And they said, yeah, knock yourself out. And so a lot of the words are original, but a lot of them I've also rewritten based on their stories.
Okay. Now, I've got a second track from you as well to play, and this one's got Merlin Quaife and yourself performing.
And myself, yes. This is from Mary's story. She had a dream. She was being Eastern or anything, very religious woman, and probably more spiritually religious, not, you know, always going to church, and particularly had a very strong connection with the Virgin Mary. And she had a dream, a vision, that she was told she was going to be unwell before she found out. So this is her dream. So Merlin's saying Il Bambin Miach, which is in Maltese, suffer little child,
right,
and little baby Jesus is with you. And then it's about Mary coming and sort of looking at her, thinking actually that she actually thought she was going to die. But in fact, the dream wasn't about that. It was about this was going to happen to her and she was going to be okay.
Okay, this is The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. On The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and I told you before that you should definitely keep the phone next to you, because if you remember this number, 96992949, I'll repeat it once more, 96992949, there is a double pass to see Avatar available tonight, and it is for the Friday session, which is this coming Friday. So it's a fascinating opera. You've been able to hear some of the music already, and I think it's quite beautiful and wonderful. So I am joined, of course, by the composer, Emma O'Brien, and she's here to talk a little bit more about the opera with us. And look, Emma, one of the things that I was just interested about this particular opera was just the fact that it's sort of taken such a long time to put together. I mean, is that sort of like normal to sort of go through such a 5-year process?
I think this piece needed it in a way. It was written very quickly to start with, the first stage. It was written over 16 weeks. the opera therapy part, and then it needed to sit for a bit, so it sat down and nestled itself into everyone's brains for a while. And then when the documentary came out in 2005, that's probably when we really actively started working on it, beginning of 2006 actually. So it's had a long gestation, and then over those times we've worked into different elements. So now we have puppetry in the opera. It wasn't originally in it. And I've worked with some great people. Marianne Lynch is the dramaturg at Malthouse, and she was fantastic. She went through the whole libretto with me, and, "What's it about, Emma?" And I said, "Oh, what's it about, people?" "No, but what's it about, Emma?" And then I finally hooked into that actually what the opera's about is transformation. So once I had that vessel, it was much easier to work it all in and tighten it all up. And so over the years, we've had lots of workshops, and that's how people like Merlin Quaife became involved. And so I've had the opportunity to hear the piece, as opposed to just hearing it in my head and on the computer. So to actually hear singers, and then you bring in instruments, and then you develop it even further. So it's had a sort of its own journey.
And the participants of this project have kind of sort of taken the journey with you as well, at different points, how they've sort of felt with the opera and the way it's sort of being received by people.
Yes, absolutely. So in terms of the original opera therapy participants, so when they sort of gave me permission to develop it further, they would turn up to the workshops and just check in. But that was great for the singers too, because they got to then meet the person that they were, the story that they were telling, which I think is a pretty unique experience. And that's happened all the way along. Sadly, we've lost two of them as well. But they certainly heard its latest incarnation, as close as it's got to. And we're really pleased that we were going to keep going. And, you know, it's a long journey to create an opera too, because operas are notoriously expensive to put on. So part of that journey is also raising money. So, you know, putting in applications. And we've had lots of great support, as I said before, from the philanthropist Betty Ampson and her friends, and now the Cancer Council have come on board as well. So we have, and then Arts Victoria gave us another grant. So we've been lucky, but all those things take time, as well as writing music.
And there's hope, of course, to take this on tour as well at some point.
Yes,
as well.
That's the plan. So this is actually like a showcase of the production, and this is working with people from Liminal Theatre. Robert Draffin's a fantastic director. This is really taking the puppetry to its furthest level. Amazing set design by Indira Shanahan. Ivanka Sokol is this incredible videographer. The imagery that she's used to help us tell the story is absolutely stunning. I'm actually performing in it in a way. I'm thinking, oh, I don't get to see it, but I get to be in it, which is lovely. And so this is sort of us going, okay, this is this opera fully cooked. Where can we take it now? So I feel like this, although it's been a long journey, this isn't the end. This is almost the beginning.
Yeah. You've just got to put on, you know, it's just boiled, and now you've got to put on a simmer. Let's talk a little bit more about the sort of the puppetry and the multimedia. There's quite a lot of sort of, It looks, I've seen some of the photos, it looks like there's a lot happening in this particular opera as well. Like, how did that all come into play, and, you know, what's sort of happening?
Well, we played around quite early on with the puppetry, because we really felt that it needed that sort of subtext. Puppets do subtext really beautifully, and Sarah Kriegler and her partner Jacob are both puppeteers, and the way they can bring something to life, I mean, they can play with a sheet and I'm transfixed, you know. They've got these incredible movements, and it works well within this opera too. So because at times people are talking about distressing things, we're not sort of acting it out. We're not, you know, putting chemotherapy into someone's arm or something like that. But through puppetry you can tell that story in a much more approachable way, and I think in a more powerful way and in a more authentic way. They also do a lot of shadow puppets and giant puppets. You know, for Bruce, there's this motif of the bird as it flutters around on the sea, and there's all this lovely, and that ties in well with the imagery too. So with what Ivanka does is we're actually image projection surfaces as well, and so is the orchestra. The orchestra is on stage with us, and they're all in white, so they can project imagery onto them and onto the floor. And Indira's made this incredible set that almost looks like cells broken up.
Right.
So there's lots. I think that's the best thing about opera, isn't it? You get to put all these wonderful things in to help tell the story. And what I actually do love about Robert's direction is that he doesn't overdo it. So he's got all these elements, but he's very contained, and they're only there for a purpose, not just because we can show off and, you know, show something beautiful. It's there for a reason, and it's in good hands. The opera,
sure. And now it's going to be at a a space that I've never heard of, Space 28, which I've been told by you is a quite an intimate and lovely space.
Yeah, it's a good space. It's actually at the VCA Drama School. It's a bit like the Merlin Theatre at the Malthouse in terms of, because we needed a big floor area, and we've actually kept the audience to 150 because we wanted to keep it on that level. And, you know, if it went on tour, it would be a similar sort of setup. So we keep that intimacy. I think when you're telling such intimate stories, you need to really be able to connect with your audience.
Now, I've got one final piece from you, which is
it's a very quick one.
A short one.
Yes, this is from the beginning of the opera. I think everyone's going to understand this, although this is a lazy Sunday, but it's called Always So Busy. And it's about, because when you first meet everybody, cancer isn't in their lives, but there is something missing from their lives. And so this is about them being just racing around. So this is again from another rehearsal.
Okay, so this is The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was the introduction to Avatar. Emma O'Brien, the composer, has been with us for the last almost half an hour, I think. Oh. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been fun.
Now, we do have a double pass, as I said before, to give away to this opera. It is going to be a full Friday session, which is Friday the 17th, which is this coming Friday. So if you want to go to this opera, it's a fantastic opera. 96992949 is the number to call, and Brendan's there ready to take the call, and it's going to be first caller. So I did hear the telephone ring sort of... a bit premature before, but there it goes again. So thank you so much, Emma, for coming in. I'm going to be coming along on, I think, opening on Thursday, so
yes,
I'm really
great.
Looking forward
yep.
to it. So are you excited?
I am excited. It's going to be great fun to do. And and if you do come, make sure you let yourself be known to us afterwards, because we'll come out afterwards and have a chat and so say, hi, I'm the one. But otherwise, people can book tickets yep. through MTICS, so mm-hmm. you can do it online. I think they're on holidays until Tuesday. But
I'll make sure to post it yeah. up onto the blog as well, so you can check it out tonight. I'll do it to the Joy website, so joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera,
yep.
and you can have all the details and times and, you know, get ready for it. And,
yeah. And do come along.
Now, would you like to give us sort of one final thought before we go? Because, you're talking before about, and I think it's a beautiful little thought that, the opera is more about life and the enjoyment of life than anything else.
Yeah, I think it's about learning to live. You know, all the characters, that's what they all go through, their own personal transformation. And I think sometimes when crisis is in our lives, that's when we're sort of given that chance to really connect and really live and embrace our lives. And that's what this opera is about.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Now, coming up this week as well, on Tuesday, there's going to be the opening of I Capuletti in Montecchi. I think I pronounced that right. Not quite sure, but I always told you from the start that this was a show about bad accents and bad comedy and really good music. So I've got a track from the particular opera. It is, of course, the story of Romeo and Juliet, which I'm sure that you're all quite familiar with. And this is Alina Garancia singing the Act 1 aria with, of course, she is Giulietta. So you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'll tell you a little bit about the song just right after this song is played. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Thanks very much to Bruce from Regent, who has called in for the tickets, and he's going to go tonight, to Friday, to the Friday's performance of Avatar the Opera. And thanks very much again to Emma O'Brien, who came in to speak about her wonderful opera. You got to hear some of the music from it, and it is absolutely, I think it's enchanting. So you can you know, I'll post up on the blog tonight on the joy.org.au, The Fool and the Opera, details of the particular performances that you can go see to this week. And as I said before, that before I accidentally cut off that beautiful, beautiful aria from the Capulets and Montagues, or I Capuletti and Montecchi, I think that's right. It's the story of Romeo and Juliet, which I'm sure everyone is incredibly familiar with. You know, there's so many retakes and tellings of it. The original, of course, by Shakespeare, and, you know, even right down to Baz Luhrmann had his hand at it a few, almost a decade ago now, I think. It's a bit scary. Yeah, a decade ago of Claire Danes doing that particular story. It should be quite an interesting one, because this particular one was written by Bellini, and the music is sort of that bel canto phase where, you know, it's when we were talking before about with Emma about sort of, you know, you've got operas where the music is quite structured. In Bellini's day, the music was, you know, it had a sort of set tone, and it followed a particular particular path, and, you know, you could sometimes it sort of repeats itself, but, you know, it's all about sort of being able to showcase the voice in a very beautiful way. And in this particular one, you know, you kind of get some very spectacular arias where, you know, the heights are hit, and there's a beautiful quintet as well. So it's definitely an opera worth seeing Opera Australia are doing, and it's in Melbourne at the moment. In Melbourne, we're sport for choice this coming fortnight, because you do have, you know, The Magic Flute is already out. We've got Capulets and Montagues coming out this week with Opera Australia, and then you've got Avatara the Opera being performed by, More Than Opera is putting it on with Emma O'Brien, which is a wonderful, wonderful opera, as I said before. It's coming out this Thursday, and next week we've also got Rembrandt's Wife from Victorian Opera. So, look, in Melbourne, we really, really are lucky and sport for choice. Now, I'm going to play, as I said before, a piece of music that should be a little bit controversial, because it is about a goddess, and, you know, a pagan goddess at that, and being, you know, the weekend of our holy Christian saviour, you know, it is a little bit controversial to play something that has a goddess in it, but I think at the end of the day, we all know that women are... I don't know where I'm going to go with this, but I was at a conference in Adelaide last week, and there was an Aboriginal welcome to country, and the woman who got up and spoke said that, you know, she believes that, you know, we are all connected by a spirit, and we're all connected because, you know, the performers that were on the stage were with her family, and those who weren't her family were part of her tribe, and those who weren't part of her tribe are part of her part of her extended family, a part of, you know, her people. And when we talk about that sort of notion of having a god, you know, really at the end of the day, she always knew that God was a woman, and that woman was Mother Earth. So yeah, this is this is what I'm talking about. We're talking about a woman being a god and a goddess, and it's wholly plausible, and I think that it has much more merit and sense than a male god, but that's beside the point. This particular aria is called Ascension. It's from the Paul Schwartz collection, where he takes operas and he sort of spins them on their head, and he gives them a bit of a remake or a shake-up. And this particular one comes from the opera The Coronation of Poppea, and it was put on by Victorian Opera last year, I think, this particular opera. Beautiful opera. And this particular aria is the last aria from that opera. It comes from the moments when Poppea and Claudio ascend the throne, and she is crowned the Empress of Rome. And basically at this point as well, the goddess of love, or Aphrodite, or Venus, comes into the picture and says, "Yep, I told you all along, love will prevail." So it's a beautiful little piece that will, sort of, I think, just sort of zone you out get you ready for the next show, which is going to be a lovely night of jazz on Bent Notes with Kirsten. So this is Ascension from the Paul Schwartz album called Metamorphosis. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was the very beautiful Ascension from the Paul Schwartz album. It's called Metamorphosis. I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful CD with a lot of opera remixed in really beautiful and fantastic ways. Bo Vigushin, who's going to be on Breakfast tomorrow, put me onto it a while ago, and I think it's just absolutely amazing. So thank you so much for joining in on the show today and listening in. It's always a pleasure to have you, and it's always a pleasure to be presenting this show for you, because it's always fun to mix things up a bit, and that last track is definitely one of those little mix-up ones that we'd like to play. Thank you so much, of course, to Emma O'Brien as well, who came in to talk about her opera Avatar, which will be opening this week. I'll post up the details on the blog, and you can check out a lot of other things on the blog as well, including updates and all sorts of other little, you know, gimmicky videos that I'll put up to keep you interested as long as possible. So that's joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera, and coming up next, we've got Kirsten with Bent Notes, and it's gonna be a beautiful night of great jazz, so stick around. It's gonna be excellent. So thank you so much again, as I said before, and I'll see you again next week. As Monteverdi would say, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.